Hello again, everyone.
Oh, baby, welcome to it. It's Friday, the 27th day of September 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Thanks for listening, tuning in, spreading the word, pressing play, downloading, sharing, rating, and reviewing, grabbing other people's phones and doing all that, forcing them to listen. I love getting the emails from people. I'm Derek Hunter. I don't know if I said that already. I'm drunk. No, I'm not. Got a great show, lots of stuff. We have a guest coming up, an interview with Mark Moreno. He is the big boss man over at climatedepot.com. He has forgotten more than most people know about climate change, and there's a difference. Mark isn't on the bandwagon. He doesn't have a financial incentive to go out there and tell you that the world is coming to an end. He's not running for office. He's not trying to scare children. He's not trying to advance a liberal agenda. He follows this stuff and dissects it like the kid who got an A on Frog Day in biology class. You're going to enjoy the interview very much. Like I said, we got that, and then, but we've got, of course, a lot of stuff we get to before that. Got about 25 minutes of new, then Mark Moreno, and then 5 more minutes at the end of Mark Moreno, where I will announce the winner or loser, depending on your perspective, of the signed copy of my book. And I have decided, mostly because I have 2 envelopes, and I thought I only had 1, I will give away 2 signed copies of my book. So there will be 2 winners at the end of the program. I just like that. I'm Doubleman. I doubled your pleasure. I doubled your fun. Okay, let's start with everything. But first, a word from our sponsor. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. And that's why I use CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. Just put a few drops under my tongue not that long ago. It's a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, but now I see why it's so popular. It really does. My eye strain just kind of goes away. I feel great. Ancient Life Oil is non-psychoactive, meaning it provides you all the benefits, but without the high. So you're not going to get high off of it. Don't worry about that. I encourage you to do your own research. Just, you know, go to the website, search on any website, CBD oil benefits, and see for yourself. You'll find out why tens of thousands of people have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine and why it's growing every day. If you're ready to live your best life, go to ancientlifeoil.com now, the trusted source for the highest quality CBD oil, ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Use the promo code Derek at checkout and you get free shipping, gratis. You can't beat it. Seriously, do a little bit of research. You don't have to go so deep. You'll find testimonials from real people. And if you talk to the people you know, I bet somebody's trying it. I bet somebody's using it. It makes a difference. Aches and pains go away. It makes your life better. AncientLifeOil.com. Promo code Derek. Okay. Yesterday, what happened? Nothing happened yesterday, right? I don't know. I took a long nap and seemed to wake up and the world was fine. Oh, yeah. No, that's right. The Democrats continued their goose-stepping towards impeachment. There was a big hearing up on Capitol Hill. Adam Schiff for brains. He was out there going, oh, I have a dream. He made up words, quotes of the president, right there on national television. I'm going to play it for you because you have to hear it to believe it. And then I'm going to tell you why it's so bad and why it was done when it was done, right at the top of the hearing. Actually, let's listen to Chairman Schiffhead right now.
This is the essence of what the president communicates. We've been very good to your country, very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here. I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only 7 times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand lots of it. On this and on that, I'm going to put you in touch with people, not just any people. I'm going to put you in touch with Attorney General of the United States, my Attorney General, Bill Barr. He's got the whole weight of the American law enforcement behind him. And I'm going to put you in touch with Rudy. You're going to love him. Trust me. You know what I'm asking, and so I'm only going to say this a few more times, in a few more ways. And by the way, don't call me again. I'll call you when you've done what I asked. This is, in sum and character, what the president was trying to communicate with the president of Ukraine. It would be funny if it wasn't such a graphic portrayal of the president's oath of office. But as it does represent a real betrayal, there's nothing the president says here that is in America's interest, after all.
Let's take the last part of that first. There's nothing the president says here, even in his fantasy version, that is in America's national interest, after all. Is it not in America's national interest to find out whether or not a vice president used their position to help enrich their children? Is that not in the national interest? I would think it is. Schiffhead doesn't care. There could be a smoking gun, there could be video, and Adam Schiff wouldn't care. He is portrayed by the media as a calm voice in this sea of despair, but he's a partisan hack as it gets. The reason he's put out there as the face of the Democratic Party on all of these things, and remember, he swore up and down, there's impeachment, we have evidence of collusion. We have evidence of collusion. And then there was no evidence of collusion. Whatever happened to his evidence of collusion? Adam, if you have this evidence of collusion, why are you withholding it from the American people? Because he's a fraud. Oh, by the way, everything you just heard Adam Schiff say is made up by him. It is not in any way, shape, or form reflective of what the actual transcript of the call that I read you yesterday said. He just made it up. He lied right there. Now, why would he do such a thing? Well, it was brought to his attention that he was lying by the Republicans on the committee. And a little bit later in the hearing, he did come back and make sort of an explanation as to why he would lie like that.
I want to mention that my colleague is right on both counts. It's not okay, but also my summary of the president's call was meant to be at least part in parody. The fact that that's not clear is a separate problem in and of itself. Of course, the president never said, if you don't understand me, I'm going to say it seven more times. My point is, that's the message that the Ukraine president was receiving in not so many words.
So it was parody. He was just parodying it. But that's what the Ukrainian president was hearing in not so many words. What's weird is earlier this week, the Ukrainian president spoke to the press at the United Nations and said he felt no pressure whatsoever. So who are you going to believe? The Ukrainian president or a secondhand reenactment / parody by Adam Schiff for brains? One of them has an agenda. Now, Adam Schiff, of course, has that agenda. He's going to plow forward. It's, again, you have the firsthand information, which is the president of the Ukraine saying, nobody pressured me. I never felt any pressure. I don't know what this is all about. And then you have Adam Schiff saying the president was putting the screws to him, man. He might as well have been pulling his fingernails out. You read that transcript. Adam Schiff's account is secondhand. That brings us to the so-called whistleblower's account. That was released yesterday by the White House, and it turns out to be a nothing burger filled with a whole bunch of untruths, shall we say. Now, why? Why? Because the whistleblower, in quotes, did not actually witness any of the things they were blowing the whistle about. They heard it from second and third-hand sources. And they felt so compelled that it was so damning, that this information was so damaging and potentially damaging to the national security, that they had to, what seems like, get to a lawyer's office, betray national security secrets, and get a lawyer to draft up the official complaint, because it reads like no normal human being would write it. Who helped write this thing? That would be interesting to know, because if this so-called, in the New York Times reports, it's a CIA officer. If this CIA officer was so disturbed at the national security threat posed by the president of the United States that they decided to divulge classified material to somebody not cleared to hear it, No, in order to save national security, I had to betray national security. In order to maintain my oath to my duty, I had to betray my duty. Anybody buying that? It all seems a little bit fishy to me. But again, Democrats love second and third hand innuendo. Anonymously sourced, the more anonymously sourced and the further removed it is from any semblance of a position of knowledge, they're down with it. Oh boy, howdy, they're down with it. It's so ridiculous. One of the allegations made by the whistleblower that Democrats tried to exploit and tried to spin, and they were calling this a cover-up yesterday, was that the transcript of the call with the president of Ukraine was not stored on a computer system where those transcripts are normally stored. They were stored on a separate computer system that stores more secretive information, meaning fewer people have access to it. And they thought, well, this is a cover-up. Why would the president do that? Why would they take this call and put it on that server? Well, that's obvious to everybody involved with a D after their name that the president of the United States knew what he was doing, that he was putting the screws, that he had the finger clamps on there, and he was starting the waterboarding of the Ukrainian president, and he didn't want the world to know about it. Well, the White House has a very simple, basic, rational explanation for this, which is why Democrats have to lie about it. Again, I started yesterday's show by saying if you have the truth on your side, you don't have to lie. If you have the evidence, the evidence is with you, you have no reason to lie, to make things up. Yet everything about this is making things up. Cast your mind back to the first couple of weeks of the Trump administration. Do you remember the stories about the phone calls between President Trump and world leaders? I believe it was the president of, or rather prime minister, it was the prime minister of Australia and the leader of Mexico. Within a couple of weeks of his presidency, they had an argument. President Trump had an argument with these leaders. The calls did not go well. And those calls leaked. Transcripts of those calls were leaked to the press by somebody in the White House. Somebody in the deep state decided the world needed to know. That, of course, damaged the United States in real tangible ways, because if we start seeing leaks of any president's conversations with world leaders where they have to be able to speak candidly with one another, then other world leaders will be less likely to speak candidly with the president of the United States. Not only Donald Trump, but whoever the next president of the United States is. Once these norms are established, they're impossible to unestablish. So the White House, someone in the White House, I would imagine is probably somebody at the chief of staff or close to the chief of staff, said, you know what? This is ridiculous. We're going to make sure that these transcripts are secured better. We're going to put them on a server that that very few people have access to, because very few people have a need to have access to the president's conversations with world leaders. This isn't a cover-up. They do this with all of the transcripts, phone calls between the president and world leaders, because the system that used to be in place was betrayed. It was abused by someone for partisan political reasons. And yet Democrats are now trying to portray this as, well, he's obviously trying to cover this up. The president doesn't want people to know what he's saying to world leaders, because he knows he's putting the screws to Ukraine and making sure that they never, ever, you know, they do his bidding, that they go and they do his bidding. They don't step out of line. They get in line and they stay in line. Well, there's an interesting bit of information there that nobody talked about yesterday. Ken Vogel is, if you don't know him, he writes for the New York Times. He's a reporter for the New York Times. He used to be at Politico, so on and so forth. A CNN contributor, or MSNBC contributor, even worse. He's supposedly a conservative. He says, the call makes no sense. Why would the $400 million in withheld critically needed military aid be the top priority of the call? It's inexplicable. The only rational explanation is President Zelensky understood it was being used as leverage. Well, there's a problem with that, as Ken Vogel points out. Ken writes, quote, the Ukrainians weren't made aware of the assistance, that the assistance was being delayed, reviewed, until more than a month after the call. So a month after the call was when Ukraine discovered, was told, whatever, that the alleged leverage that President Trump was supposedly lording over the head of the president of Ukraine actually existed, that there was this delay. It took a month. So then what exactly was the leverage? What was the sword of Damocles? What was the hammer hanging over the president of Ukraine that he was feeling this pressure as a mob boss would apply, as Democrats and journalists, although they're the same thing now, were spewing on cable television all yesterday? Yeah, that's right. There was no leverage. There was no possible way for there to be leverage because the Ukraine had no idea that this was a possibility, that the funding, the aid was delayed. The New York Times in their story wrote, quote, Mr. Trump did not discuss the delay in the military assistance on the July 25th call with Mr. Zelensky, according to people familiar with the conversation. A Ukrainian official said Mr. Zelensky's government did not learn of the delay until about 1 month after the call. Well, how do you have leverage retroactively or preemptively? Of course, you can't. So there was no leverage. There was no quid pro quo. Remember, that was the story we were promised. Quid pro quo. When there, you know, if you don't investigate Joe Biden, you're not going to get this aid. Then once the transcript came out and it was shown that in the transcript they never discussed anything about delaying any of this aid and there was no ask for a direct investigation into Joe Biden, the story changed. This has all happened in 1 week, this week. The story changed in the media and from the Democrats. It was implied. This is how mob bosses talk. It was all just implied there. Well, you'd really have to imply the hell out of it because Ukraine had no freaking idea that it was a possibility, right? Ukraine had no idea that this existed. Then ABC News had a big report yesterday. Oh, my God, a big advisor to Zelensky said that Zelensky was aware that Trump wanted Biden investigated or else. Then, later on in the day, a few hours later, ABC News decided to do some journalism about their own story and discovered, bum, 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 the alleged aid to Zelensky never actually was an aid to Zelensky, and he was just speculating on what he'd read in the media. So they had to correct and retract the story. Again, print first, journalism later. Everything about this thing stinks to high heaven. Meanwhile, you've got Democrats running around saying, well, this is grounds for impeachment. This is obviously grounds for impeachment. We need to impeach. This is ridiculous. Now we must act. And Democrats, apparently, according to reports, are planning on acting. They have a bit of a timeline laid out for impeachment that calls for this, the Ukraine situation, to be the main focus of impeachment. On what grounds, they don't know. They're just going to keep lying about it. I mean, they've gotten this far with lying. But they, according to Maggie Haberman of the New York Times, they hope to have a vote on the floor on articles of impeachment by Thanksgiving. Isn't that lovely? What's telling here is the House is about to go on recess for 2 weeks. Now, some of the radical leftists who just want to impeach Donald Trump for having beaten Hillary Clinton, they were saying, you know, we need to cancel recess. You need to show the world how serious this is. Cancel recess. They're not going to cancel recess. My God, they don't give a damn about that. They didn't cancel recess for a government shutdown. What the hell do they care about anything? Even if this were a real national security emergency, they're not going to cancel recess. There's an election next year. They got to get back home and glad hand and kiss babies. But really, what they want to do, and they're telegraphing their punch here and really exposing themselves, is they're viewing these 2 weeks as an opportunity to go home and try and change the poll numbers that are overwhelmingly opposed to impeachment. They want Democratic members to go back to their districts and sell the idea that Donald Trump offered some sort of quid pro quo to the Ukraine in exchange for digging up or making up dirt on Joe Biden. Notice they have no interest in whether or not there actually is any dirt on Joe Biden. They couldn't care less about whether or not there was any dirt on Joe Biden. Joe Biden's kid gets $600,000 a year for something he's completely unqualified for, while Joe Biden is the point man on the U.S.-Ukraine relations, and Joe Biden calls for the firing and gets the firing of the prosecutor in Ukraine that was investigating the company paying Hunter Biden $600,000 a year for a no-show job. And they look away and yawn and say, well, you know what? We once asked Joe whether or not there was anything corrupt about it, and he said no, so what are you going to do? Take his word for it. It is a scam. And expect over the next 2 weeks, especially if you live in a Democratic district, your members of Congress will be running around at town halls. They'll be going to strip mall openings and whatever the hell else it is that they do, trying to convince people that somewhere buried in this transcript is a threat to national security, a violation of the president's oath of office, and an attempted cover-up. If this is an attempted cover-up, Donald Trump is as bad at covering up things as he is at being a racist, because he's not a racist. He's really, you know, Donald Trump is such an anti-Semite. He's a horrible anti-Semite if he's an anti-Semite. He's really bad at it. So his daughter and son-in-law are Jewish. He's got Jewish advisors. He's been the best friend to Israel this country's ever had in the White House. But hey, you know what? He's a secret anti-Semite. It's so secret that even he doesn't know it. The left will tell you. Well, if there's a cover-up going on here, remember the President of the United States released the transcript of the phone call. He declassified that for that to be released. He also declassified the whistleblower report. He authorized the whistleblower to go before Congress and testify. The Director of National Intelligence, the acting Director of National Intelligence, was allowed to testify freely yesterday at that hearing where Adam Schiff lied at the beginning of it. If this is a cover-up, what are they covering up? Cover-ups generally don't involve here's everything you've asked for. Yet that's what the Trump administration is doing. And by the way, I didn't forget. Well, I kind of did, but now I remember when I said that Adam Schiff started off the hearing that way with the lie, with his fantasy, with his little improv parody thing, because the hearing was carried on not only cable news, but it was carried on the broadcast networks live as well. There were millions of Americans watching yesterday who were hearing about this crap for the first time. And if you read the transcript accurately, people yawn and look at you and going, they're getting upset about what? So Adam Schiff could not be truthful in his opening statement. So he decided to do some improv, like it's suddenly a junior college theater class, and just make Schiff up. That's why he did it. Because most of those people, or a large percentage of those people who happened to catch the start of the hearing at 10 o'clock before they changed the channel, were given a false impression. And a false impression is really the only way this Democrat plot, this Democrat coup, stands a chance of working. Because the truth is right there for everybody to see it. everybody to read it. Most people aren't going to read it. Most people aren't going to see it. They have to take the word of their elected officials, because you're supposed to be able to trust your elected officials, right? Well, just expose the chairman of the committee, the face of Democrats' impeachment investigation, as a liar. And he says it's over a parody. It is a total and complete and utter fraud. And that brings us to our other sponsor for today. And it's accurate and it's important and it's timely. Every day, President Trump is facing unprecedented obstruction and harassment from the liberal mob and their fake news allies. He's been exonerated twice, and they're still calling for impeachment because they know Congress is their last hope, maybe their only hope. He needs your support now more than ever. Text the word daily to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself, be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available, and you'll even be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text the word daily to 88022. While Democrats and their fake news media allies have spent the last 2 years focused on bogus witch hunts, and they're not done. They're still going. President Trump has been working around the clock to make America great again. Make sure you're getting the news directly from the source by texting the word daily to 88022. Again, text the word daily to 88022. This was paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. I can't believe this is who we are as a society. I can't believe it's so sad that there are so many Americans who now buy into this crap, who are still believing the media. The Federalist has a great piece by my buddy Sean Davis. He's co-founder of the Federalist. He also was around at the founding of the Daily Caller. I was the first person hired. Sean was maybe the seventh person brought in, somewhere in there. It's definitely top 10. He wrote a piece at the Federalist. Complaint from so-called whistleblower is riddled with gossip and blatant falsehoods. And it's true. And you see, let's see, here you go. They say Trump made, quote, and this is according to the whistleblower's statement, the legal document, quote, Trump made, quote, specific requests that Ukrainian leader locate and turn over servers used by the Democratic National Committee and examined by U.S. cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike, the complaint alleges. The review of the transcript call shows that Trump mentioned CrowdStrike once during the call. He never made such a request about locating and turning over multiple servers to the U.S. That is but one of the many lies, or you know, it's a lie because it was done deliberately, but falsehoods in the whistleblower report, things that turned out not to be true because it's second and third hand information. What's also interesting to note about the whistleblower report is that it was a letter, there was a letter sent to Adam Schiff by the attorneys for the whistleblower that was dated back in August. That means Adam Schiff had all this information. He'd been tweeting. He'd been hinting at these sorts of things, this so-called scandal brewing, for the last month. He knew about this. Yet he goes on national television during this hearing, clutching his pearls, going, oh my God, holy Frank Tanana, I've never heard of such a thing. This is a shock to me, and you're trying to keep this information from the world. Well, Adam, if you thought that this was so important, why didn't you tell the world you had this information? Why did you not come forward with it? Because it wasn't the right time. They had to position themselves to be ready to pounce. And they tried. And they fell flat. And that's why Adam Schiff has to lie at the start of a hearing that's nationally televised, because the truth does not serve them well. And Democrats will not be bound by a silly little concept like the truth when it comes to trying to get rid of the President of the United States. It's really a sad, sad commentary on us as a society that we have so many Americans who would elect people like this. One last little bit before we get to the interview, and then I'll have more stories after the interview and the book giveaway. 6 days ago on the Washington Examiner website, Susan Ferriccio, who is one of the few genuine reporters in Washington, works up on Capitol Hill, has sources, does the legwork, all that good stuff that journalists used to do. She had a piece up on September 21st. It was posted at 6 a.m., means it was written on September 22nd. Analysis: does Schiff already know the Trump whistleblower's story? He feigned ignorance the whole time. Said, did House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff have inside details about the Trump whistleblower story 2 weeks ago? Earlier this month, the California Democrat announced a, quote, wide-ranging investigation into allegations President Trump was trying to pressure Ukraine's government into aiding his reelection campaign. Schiff ordered the investigation on September 9th, hours before he received the first of two letters from the intelligence community inspector general revealing the existence of a whistleblower complaint. Multiple news outlets reported this week that the complaint involved, at least in part, a phone conversation between Trump and recently elected Ukrainian President Zelensky. Inspector General Michael Atkinson's letter didn't provide Schiff with the details, but some Republicans say they suspect Schiff knew them already and was orchestrating a headline-grabbing story from his perch on the intelligence panel. Earlier on the day, the Atkinson letter, Schiff demanded the Trump administration turn over documents and correspondence related to Trump's alleged attempts to get Ukrainian government officials to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Included in his list of demands was a transcript from Trump's July 22nd call with Zelensky, which news reports say alarmed the whistleblower. Schiff insisted to reporters Thursday that he doesn't know the details of the, this is last Thursday, that he doesn't know the details of the complaint and accused the president of trying to stifle whistleblower complaints and blocking the information from reaching Congress. Last week, whine, piss, moan, they're not giving me all I'm demanding, even though at the time he allegedly didn't know what to demand, yet officially was demanding the exact thing that the so-called whistleblower was citing. Isn't that weird? Well, of course, we know Adam Schiff is an unscrupulous liar and a fraud and quite good at theatrics, especially because he goes on CNN and MSNBC exclusively, won't go anywhere near anybody who would challenge him in any critical way. He might go on Fox, but he'd only go on to talk with Shepard Smith, who would give him a throne-sniffing type interview. This was all orchestrated from the beginning. The problem for Schiffhead and for Democrats is Donald Trump said, here, you want this information? Here it is. And the world saw it, or at least had the opportunity to see it, and found that there is nothing remotely close to the way it was described in news reports leading up to this. There was no, find me the dirt, get me this. There was no, do me a favor and go get Joe Biden. It was, do me a favor and help our government investigate Ukraine's involvement in the 2016 election meddling, which used to be a story. There were a bunch of stories written in the last 2 years about how it wasn't just Russia. It was coming out of Ukraine as well, this so-called election meddling. Suddenly, that's all been memory-holed. You don't hear about the stories of Ukraine's involvement in the old Ukrainian government and the corrupt left-wing Ukrainian government's attempts to aid Hillary Clinton. You don't hear about that anymore in the media, but you heard about it in the past. Back on January 11th, 2017, before Donald Trump was even sworn in, here's that name again, Ken Vogel, back when he worked at Politico, now with the New York Times. Headline, Politico, Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. Subheadline, Kiev officials are scrambling to make amends with the president-elect after quietly working to boost Clinton. What? What? That's so crazy. The story, Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating top Trump aide in corruption and suggested that they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election. And they helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors, a Politico investigation found. What a campaign for president seeking aid and accepting aid from a foreign government? Except, of course, nobody talks about this story anymore. The campaign was Hillary Clinton, and the foreign government was Ukraine, and it was the lefty Ukrainian government, the corrupt Ukrainian government. If you made this up, nobody would believe you. If you went and told your friends this today, they wouldn't believe you because this story has been memory-holed. It might as well not exist. That's the state of journalism. That's the state of the Democratic Party today. But then again, I repeat myself. There's going to be much more to say about this next week. We have to get to the interview with Mark Moreno at the end. I have an update on an updated story that was our feel-good story of the day as well, plus a little quick snippet on insanity out of California. But right now, it's time to get real about the greatest hoax ever sold, climate change, with Mark Moreno of ClimateDepot.com. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast, the Friday video edition where we grab somebody from their normal lives and bring them into ours to pick their brain, learn some things, expand our horizons. Today is no different. We're joined by Mark Moreno. He's the head honcho of the big cheese over at ClimateDepot.com. He's also author of the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Derek. Happy to be here today.
You know more about this stuff than most people. You've forgotten more about it. I always forget how that saying goes. There you go. You've forgotten more about this stuff than most people know about this stuff. Before we get into all the things, because this was supposed to be the week of climate, and there's always a continual push behind it, how did you get involved in this issue?
Well, I come at this, I always like to joke that I'm not a scientist, but I play one on TV.
So do most people.
Yeah, I'm the same as Bill Nye, right? No, Bill Nye. I come at this as an investigative journalist, and my interest in this is what started. I started in the 1990s as a actually very concerned about environmental issues, even back to the 80s. And one of my big issues was the Amazon rainforest. If you recall, before global warming was going to kill us, not having the Amazon, the lungs of the earth, et cetera, all these other misleading things they say, was going to kill us and kill all these species. I used to watch the National Geographic documentaries, got very interested. So I started investigating that. It ended up culminating in a big documentary I did in the year 2000 on the Amazon rainforest, where I went down to Brazil, interviewed the environmentalists, and they were throwing down the guidebooks, all the lies in it. It turned out it was the most intact forest on the planet, and that it was nowhere near in danger of disappearing. And even 10 years after that, the New York Times, for every acre of forest cut down, 50 are regenerating. What that told me was when I started studying global warming, I was already skeptical of the environmental movement. I felt betrayed as a kid growing up, seeing all this stuff. We're all going to die, all the tipping points.
Told about the ozone layer was being depleted. Acid rain was going to kill everybody.
Acid rain, the cities and the pollution and everything. You know, there was no hope or future. And what was amazing that happened was technological advancement. If you go back to the first Earth Day, you'll find we've radically cleaned up our air and water quality while at the same time with having huge economic growth and population increases. It can all be done. In fact, the wealthier a society is, the cleaner a society is. It's in the developing world where we actually – and I've interviewed college kids, University of Minnesota, who go around when I was in Africa for a UN Earth Summit in 2002. She was there telling people, going on a pilgrimage across Africa, telling people using animal carts and living in huts made of dung that they're doing it right. They're living earth friendly. But these people are the ones who are, you know, filling raw sewage in the air. Their kids are dying young, high infant mortality. They don't have modern dentistry. We've got the whole message wrong, but it really is true that the more wealth the cleaner your environment. So I started, and I didn't have my eye opener until the 1990s on that. And then I became an investigative journalist, did all that work for the United States Senate Environment and Public Works Committee as the communication director. Also did a climate report on the, ended up being over 1,000 dissenting scientists. So started Climate Depot 10 years ago, and that's what I've been doing. And the book came out last year, and a new edition this year on the Politically Incorrect book with a bonus chapter on the Green New Deal. Maybe next year I'll have a bonus chapter on Greta. Who knows?
On non-recycled virgin paper made from fresh pulp, not that recycled crap. Let's talk a little bit about the environmental movement and where they started to go wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I sort of ascribe good motives to the founding of most things, and then they just go astray. They go either they're ignorant, but they're good. They think they're doing right. At what point did? Because the earth was much more polluted than it is now.
Yes.
Now they act as though a grocery bag is the worst thing ever done to the world. You go dump a gallon of mercury in the drinking water. Nobody cares about that. Yeah. It's that plastic bag makes you Hitler. When did the movement sort of go from, hey, let's clean up after ourselves and respect the environment to let's worship the environment. It doesn't matter what the cost to humanity is. Screw humanity. They're the root of all evil. Let's embrace essentially full communism.
Good question. If you go back to, say, Teddy Roosevelt's presidency, that was the first real mainstream conservation. He set up the national parks. And I think there was a whole era of that conservation that went up, and everything really changed with, I guess you'd call the conservation environmental movement. What about with Rachel Carson and the Silent Spring. And then really with Paul Ehrlich. Paul Ehrlich and John Holdren worked together. But Paul Ehrlich's overpopulation scare, that was really the sea change.
1968,
I believe the book was 1966 or something, maybe 65 or 66. It was the overpopulation bomb. And that book changed everything because there was a lot of forces behind the scenes trying to radicalize it. It was also the rise of the 60s campus protests, the cultural Marxism, if you will, rise of political correctness, where everything was changing. But it infected the environmental movement was the alarmism. And Paul Ehrlich started out with all of the doomsday back then, to the point where he was considered by his contemporaries in old newspaper articles that some of his solutions were akin to Nazi Germany. They were talking about putting in
forced sterilization put in the water.
But he would now say, and his defenders would say, well, he wasn't advocating that. He was merely coming up with different possibilities of the way.
Solution of many.
Yeah, it's one. These are just possibilities. So that radicalized the environmental movement, and it also made it, unscientific, because he came up with all these weird talking. Like, we're going to have famine by 1980. Within 5 years, London will be a blue steam. We're going to run out of oil in like the next decade. All these predictions, which were absolutely proven false, and he had a bet even with Julian Simon, who was opposed to him, a free market environmentalist, and he lost on every bet about rare earth minerals and other things they bet on that were not going to be declining. About basically the earth is sustainable the way humans live. So he was proven wrong on every pot, but he still continued to go. And then from there, we jumped into a whole bunch of other environmental issues, from deforestation scare, global cooling. What I found in doing research for the book is, no matter what scare, since the overpopulation scare of the 60s, it's always the same solution. Sovereignty limiting treaties, wealth redistribution, and central planning. It's it.
I love that. They have a solution in search of a problem. Oh, it's the coming ice age. We've got, here's the set of solutions. Oh, now it's global warming. It's the same set of solutions. The exact opposite things. And some people just go, oh, everything has changed except the solutions. 180 degrees. Okay, we just go along. Why do people have a willingness to accept that? Obviously, Paul Ehrlich's book, The Population Bomb, didn't come to pass. He was talking about death and destruction and mass famine long before now. It didn't come to pass, yet there's still a willingness, the same willingness, I would say, in the mid-60s to embrace that idea that there is to embrace climate change is going to kill us all. The polar ice caps are going to melt. Barack Obama's telling us the oceans are going to rise while he's buying $15 million mansions right on the ocean.
Yes.
Why do we have – is it they're convincing, or is it something about us as human beings that has us willing to believe that we're all going to die?
No, I think it's the latter, what you just said. People have an innate – they almost want to be – fearful. They wanna be prepared, so they're more inept, not inept, but they're more willing to accept this kind of doomsday, especially the younger you are. And that's, you know, when you're older, you've seen it all, heard it all. All the polling shows you the older you are, the more skeptical. The younger you are, the more alarmed. Actually, new polling data this week by Rasmussen shows more than 51% of kids think the Earth is really doomed, and we only have about a decade or so that before it's going to be collapsing. But this is what kids have been taught from kindergarten all the way through, and humans are very susceptible to that message. But global warming is merely the latest scare to have the same exact solutions. That's why it's so funny, the Green New Deal. It's like, you know, all it is recycling what we were talking about in the 60s and 70s. There's literally nothing new or green about it.
I get why kids fall for it. You're told by people in positions where you're supposed to trust them that this is going to happen, and they have to work to try and stop it. I understand that. The adults, I can understand it from kind of a power perspective. Yes. But the media, which I know you deal with a lot and have dealt with and used to be a member of, what is the incentive there to the point where you have Chuck Todd going on Meet the Press saying, we're not going to even entertain anybody who is skeptical. Forget denier, the Holocaust term that they've created, but even skeptical, who questions. Now, the very nature of science is to question.
It's questioning, yeah.
Nothing is ever set, yet we now have a purity of thought enforced by the media that the world hasn't seen since the 1930s in Europe. What is the incentive there?
It's amazing. I mean, I can up you, your Chuck Todd, the former CBS news anchor Scott Pelley has said, I will not interview a climate denier on the CBS Evening News for the same reason I wouldn't interview a Holocaust denier. Direct comparisons. And of course, ABC News had the same type of reporting. CNN used to be more open. I mean, they used to host debates. I debated Bill Nye on CNN primetime. I debated the Sierra Club. They have now shut out all climate skeptics, and as well as all the other major media. LA Times started this, the Washington Times, New York Times. They don't believe that they could possibly allow a debate. And the reason for that is it gets in the way of these solutions, which they're pushing. And it's amazing, because even like the recent story on the Amazon about the fires.
Right.
That was the sleaziest reporting I had seen. I mean, the Washington Post front page article said it's unprecedented, you know, huge 84% increase in fires. I'm like, how is this possible? I've been to Brazil several times. I've interviewed all this. There's just no way. And you read really closely, and this is what's parroted, 84% year-to-year increase. So 2017, which was an unusually low year, yeah, it was a big jump this year. But if you go back, NASA satellites showed it was a below average year to near average in terms of fire. And it gets worse. Bolivia was having – the Amazon encompasses many – I think like 9 countries or 11 countries, depending on how it's defined as the political Amazon or the jungle Amazon. But the other countries where the fires were raging included places like Bolivia, where their president was calling for a environmental court and his real socialist government, who is a massive environmentalist, and the environmentalists love him. There was no criticism of the fires going on there. So that was a purely political issue. And one of the tricks the media does, besides doing the year-to-year and ignoring the big picture, they twice in this Washington Post front page story on the Amazon, it included an environmental activist and some professor who said, it's the worst fires in my memory. I can't remember anything worse. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, why does a paper, front page article, 2 different quotes about people's memory? You don't need people's memories. We have the actual data. Right. We have satellite images. We have satellite scientific data from NASA. This is the way the media cons. And it's all about, in that case, it was about trying to destroy the Brazilian Trump, Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil, because they didn't like him, because he's pulling out of the UN Paris Agreement.
One of the things I say all the time is, when you control the unit of measure, you always win. And that seems to be what you're saying. You know, if you're in, I'm polling at 1%, and next month you're polling at 2%, you're still going
to lose. 100% increase.
But if you come out and say, we've doubled our support, or something, it depends on how you want to frame it. So much of what passes as environmentalism and environmental activism is just that. It's the hottest August ever. It's this or that.
That's a good point. That's actually the hottest July is what they claimed. And world record. Now I'm like, why are they focusing on 1 month? And that's, by the way, only in the land data, not the satellites. And remember, NASA had set up the satellites in 1979. And one of the quotes, I love this, was satellites are a more accurate way to measure temperatures. That's until they don't show the warming that the land surface does, which is corrupted. So what happened in July, they tried to make it the hottest month. Why? It's called a misdirection. We had a high point basically in 2016 with this massive El Nino. And even with that, if you go back to the late 90s, on many data sets, including the satellite, there's essentially been no change in global temperatures within the margin of error. But so we're on a 3.5-year cooling trend right now since the high point of 2016. How do you misdirect? You start saying, this is the hottest day in Greenland one day. This is the hottest month we've had. It's the same way with polar bears. Polar bears are at or near historic population highs. How do you come out with a report saying it's worse than we thought on polar bears? Well, our predictions of 80 to 100 years are now much worse than they were 5 or 10 years ago. But there's more polar bears than ever. They're showing they're not affected. It doesn't matter. Our predictions are scarier. It's the classic, when current reality fails to alarm, makes scarier and scarier predictions. They're very good at it. They've been doing it for 50 years.
Talk about that for a second, because it fascinates me. And something I wrote in my book is starting back long before that, but the first real big story is 1989. We've got 10 years of We're All Doomed.
Yes.
We've gone through three cycles of 10 years of We're All Doomed. They used to make those kind of predictions. And if you're the leader of a doomsday cult, say, Tuesday, all life is coming to an end. Come Wednesday morning, you're probably not going to have many followers left. You're going to have – and that hasn't happened yet with the environmental movement, but they – got smart. At some point, they said 100 years. Now it's 100 years. In 100 years, there's going to be more lightning than ever. Who cares? And how do you know? But you can't, not only can't you prove it, more importantly for them, you can't disprove it.
Yes.
The science of climate is not about what has happened or what is happening. It's predictions about what will happen. And if these people are great at knowing the future, I would love some lottery numbers, please. Anyway, talk a little bit about how the way it's portrayed by both the science community and the media and what the reality is about these models. They're not really fact-based.
I have a whole section in my book on these models. And actually, United Nations scientists admit it. IPCC scientist Jim Renwick's quoted in my book saying that half of the variability in nature is not accounted for in these models, and they don't expect them to do well. Another huge UN scientist is Dr. Kevin Trenbeth. He openly admits that these are not predictions. They're merely emission scenarios. They don't expect to do pretty well. They're just... Another scientist called them tinker toys, or, you know, Sony PlayStation video games, or equivalent to them, a video game. All they do is they tune the model to what they assume carbon dioxide is a control knob of the climate, and then they project out and come up with all these scary scenarios. So what they've done here with this, what you'll see, first of all, two things. They'll have the hats now that say 10, 11 years addressing your tipping point. And they actually say like 10 years, 11 years. They had a die-in in Washington, D.C. last week. Which I went to, where Greta Thunberg spoke. This is before she headed to New York. And they had all these people laying down at the White House gates for 11 minutes. It was a die-in to represent the 11 years we had left. So these models are powerful. And then they say, the models say we have 1.5, or we had to keep it under 2 degrees Celsius. In my book, I reveal in the ClimateGate emails, top UN scientists admit that these numbers were pulled from thin air, is the exact quote. That the idea that we can say, well, if we do these kind of emission cuts, the temperature in 2100 will be this. They admit privately to each other that there's no science or any way to support that. It's just a way to rally the public. As Al Gore said last year, the UN reports are torqued up to get the attention of politicians. That's what people
don't realize. Where does this 12 years we're all going to die come from?
It comes from the most recent UN IPCC report, which came out, which basically said that unless we get the next 12 years are critical, we have to get on the right trajectory, or, you know, the runaway global warming is going to occur the next century. And so that was turned in by the media into, we only have this left. But again, the UN's been saying this nonsense. It's absolutely absurd. An Israeli astrophysicist just came out joining other scientists who say, if you look at the Earth's geologic history, carbon dioxide does not control it. Yes, it can warm the atmosphere, but there's hundreds of other factors. There is no way that we can, at the margins, fiddle with one variable in the climate, carbon, man-made CO2, and then expect to have an outcome. But they'll tell you we can. They'll say we need Obama's climate rules. This is what John Podesta had said, because the storms are getting worse, implying that if the EPA does these regulations, the storms will get better. And by the way, on every single metric, hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, droughts, they either on no trend or declining trend going on climate.
Well, after Katrina, Al Gore, things are going to be worse and it's going to keep getting. And then we had 15 years or whatever it was with no landfall.
The longest period, it was a little over 12 years, the longest period of no Category 3 or larger calling hurricanes, making landfall, the longest period since measurements began, the 1850s. And then the very first hurricanes we have, this is what climate change looks like. I did a report going back two decades with so this is what climate change looks like. No matter what happens, it's called climate ambulance chasing. I give that phrase. Joe Bastardi, the meteorologist, came up with it. Same thing that happens with guns. You know, if there's a school shooting or something, they come out of the woodwork. This is what we warned. And, you know, the same thing. But in this case, you know, we had tornadoes and Tornado Alley, of all places.
Yeah, I know.
And Barbara Boxer.
Floodplains, what?
Yes, Barbara Boxer would go down to the Senate floor. This is what we warned you about. We need cap and trade now. As though, you know, passing a cap and trade or carbon tax is going to stop those tornadoes that have been happening. And by the way, we're at record low tornadoes the last five to seven years.
Those models that they want to essentially seize our liberty and our property because of. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. If you went back 50 years, theoretically, you should be able to plug in all the data back then, hit enter, and it should show you what happened. Because if you're asking me to go 50 years in the future and base my life now on what's supposed to happen because of this computer model 50 years in the future, you better be able to demonstrate to me that you can predict that with some accuracy. How accurate are their models when you take them in reverse?
Well, interestingly enough, as you might expect, they can tune the models to make the past look like it was accurate in more of a way than they can in the future. The problem here is when they hindcast, and I interviewed many scientists on this, they can't hindcast correctly because there's so many different variables. First of all, there's not only variables that influence the climate. There's so many different temperature data sets, and there's so many different start dates, and there's so many different adjustments. So that's an impossible question to answer. How do they hindcast? It depends on which model you're looking at and how all these other variables that they include in it. But one of the biggest tricks, the National Climate Assessment came out, and this is how they trick you with the models. They used a baseline of 1970. This is a federal climate report that was done during the Trump administration. People say Trump's own scientists disagreed with him. Wait a minute. It was written by Andrew Light, Obama's holdover from the Obama administration, who negotiated the UN Paris Agreement for Obama. And the two lead authors in the report were Union of Concerned Scientists, a far-left environmental group. So my joke was if a federal new report sounds like a press release for environmental groups, that's because it is. But in terms of your question on models, they used the 1970 start date to say this is how much warming we've had. If this rate continues, our models show. Why did they use 1970? 1970 was the height of the coming ice age global cooling scare, where we had CIA reports, where we had scientists warning that we need to dump black soot on the Arctic to increase
cover the ice up there to prevent it.
And they were warning that the storms and war and famine were going to be caused by more man-made global cooling. Our aerosols were created, which were blocking the sun. So what they've done, this is how they trick you with these start lines. And the 1970s, if a guy named Tony Heller, an engineer, went back and looked at the National Climate Assessment, and he looked at the data set, went back to the 1930s, you would show a cooling trend or no trend. If they had shown policymakers, they went back further, but they weren't interested in that. They were looking for the coldest period to show the most
enhanced
warming.
You choose
warming
the
trend.
Unit of measure. You're always going to be the tallest, smartest, the funniest, the best looking, whatever it is. One of the go-to arrows in the quiver and shutting down debate, and you know all about being shut down in debate, is 97% of scientists, or whatever it is, 99% of scientists do, as if science is a show of hands. We take a vote, all right, there it is forever. Gravity doesn't exist because we got a whole bunch of scientists.
Voted,
I would love to see a bunch of religious Christians flood the field of biology and then take a vote on when life starts. And
that's
then
right,
conception and see how embracing of that concept the media would be. But that number two, it's parroted by everybody because it's brilliantly crafted. Anybody can remember it. You just spew it out there, and there's no way to rebut it. So Mark Moreno of Climate Depot, I want you to give everybody the way to rebut it. Get ready to arm yourselves.
Well, there's two. Okay, first of all, it's 99%. Right. Al Gore was just on CNN and, a couple months ago, and he upped it to 99% of all scientists agree. So 97 is old news. Secondly, the studies upon which it's based, one of the key studies, which will say 97% of scientists, wasn't even 97 scientists. It was 77 scientists that were whittled down from a statistical base of over 10,000, whittled down to 77 anonymous scientists. Of those, 75 answered the two questions to form the 97% consensus. Interestingly enough, the skeptical scientists I deal with and quote in the book, they all say they would have probably been part of the 97% because the questions essentially came down to, has the Earth warmed and do humans contribute to warming? Not, are we facing a climate crisis? Not, is there a climate emergency? And so this is how they do that con. The other study was a study based on the scientific journal saying 97% of all journals supported this and all the scientists that wrote there. It turns out that number was less than 1% because they just assumed that all these studies, because there was a study on model predictions saying global warming could be worse, that they all agree with the consensus. And that study was examined by a UN lead author who testified before Congress and said that none of the numbers in the study supported the 97%. So you have multiple attempts to get the 97. And here's the kicker. Al Gore was on PBS in 82 or 84. And he was talking about it's nearly unanimous in the scientific literature. Al Gore, one of his first hearings back when he was a senator or congressman, a senator in, from Tennessee, was touting this before anyone had any data on it. So this was a talking point in search of studies. And my favorite was the former science advisor to Margaret Thatcher, Lord Monckton, had said, so they had this talking point for several decades. They came up with a couple dopey studies to try to support it. And that's all they needed because there was no media scrutiny. So now that's a solid talking point.
And a lie repeated often enough becomes truth to some people. Looking at the current environmental movement, are they winning?
Absolutely.
They are?
They are winning everywhere. I don't know. I'm the nattering nabob of negativity, which is what Spiro Agnew called the media. They're winning everywhere. I'll let you finish your question. But
please just expand upon that because
– we are losing on every front. Not scientifically, but science doesn't matter in this debate. We are losing everywhere. And I'll tell you, in my mind, I think it's gotten worse since President Trump was elected for one simple reason. President Trump has not challenged the premise other than himself. He himself will challenge it. His cabinet is running scared. The only member was his first EPA chief, Scott Pruitt, who stood up, challenged the UN reports, did media interviews. What happened to Scott Pruitt? His own career bureaucratic staff turned against him, started leaking stuff to the media. Every day, the New York Times, Washington Post, daily hit pieces on him. Why? Because he was the only person in official Washington willing to challenge the premise of man. Not other people, oh, it costs too much, or the Green New Deal is socialism. All true. But if you're not challenging the premise. So what happened was Pruitt was run out of town. He had a bed and breakfast below market rates. He should have paid $22 more a night. He's got to go. He asked people about his wife's Chick-fil-A. Oh my gosh, a cabinet member trying to use connections to talk. Held him to a standard they wouldn't anyone else. He's run out of Washington. His new EPA chief is Andrew Wheeler. He hired me to work in the United States Senate. Will not only not talk about climate change, he will duck, he will avoid it at all costs. Rick Perry, the skeptical Texas governor, urged Trump to stay in the UN Paris Agreement, says he agrees with Al Gore, they just have different ways of going about it. The NASA head, Jim Bridenstine, was a climate skeptic congressman. Guess what? He's picked for NASA. He, right before his hearing, he has Bill Nye go as his guest at the State of the Union. He reverses himself, becomes a believer in climate change. There is not a single member of Trump's cabinet that will speak on climate, other than Trump himself, who does a heck of a job.
Right.
So anyway, we're losing. We're losing in the schools. We're losing in – we've lost – we're losing in public opinion. There's no pushback from our government. And people believe if we have the most skeptical president and administration and there's no scientific pushback, there must be something to this. I meet people all the time. Is there still a debate? I mean, how come Trump's not doing anything? If they were going to do a climate commission, Trump, according what I'm told, would actually approve the commission, but people like Mick Mulvaney and others and his staff – killed it because they didn't want to. They see going into the science of climate as sort of America's Vietnam, getting involved in a Vietnam quagmire. So then Trump in April said, I thought we approved that. But then they said, well, we'll do it after the election. So the man who was going to spearhead it, an 80-year-old Princeton physicist, 200 peer-reviewed studies, one of the foremost experts on greenhouse gas. Mass, who says we're in a CO2 famine. Dr. Will Happer just left the administration, basically in frustration after 4 years waiting to do this climate commission. It would have been the first report to push back. So that's key reason we're losing. The other reason is Trump hasn't cut an ounce of the money. We're still rubber stamping the UN reports. We're still funding them. We're still funding all the. We still have all the NASA.
Do you think just because it comes out of a university,
we are doing nothing?
It's academic. It must be intelligent.
Now Trump, he announced the intention to pull out. He announced, you know, where he did reverse Obama's executive orders. He reversed EPA stuff, but that's not. That can be undone in the first year of the next Democrat administration. There's nothing permanent. And there's everyone in America is afraid to challenge it. No one in office really will. It's only a few congressmen, a few senators. Everyone else is afraid.
Jim Inhofe,
but he's in his 80s now, right. And he's no longer on that committee. So we're few and far between. And even the Republicans now on AOC's climate crisis committee, you know, they had Greta Thunberg. They're all... They're just not willing to push back on that. Yeah, they'll push back. Oh, the planet is about to end. Well, it costs too much to fix it, and it's socialism. That's a message that can only go so far. You know, you gotta challenge their premise, and the premise is rotten. The UN is a lobbying organization, and you go through and see how the sausage is made, and it's appalling. The former head of the UN climate panel said, quote, global warming is my religion, and this is supposed to be their science panel.
You first came, and we'll wrap it up on this.
Sure.
You first came to prom. I could listen to you all day. I just we don't have all day, sadly. You first came to prominence as part of the debate. It was a debate over this. And you would be on television. You would be, I'd imagine, go around the country and have discussions with people at universities. Can't do that anymore. Is there – I had John Lott in here from the Crime Prevention Center.
Yes.
And he said that the Every Town for Gun Safety and the Brady campaign, they won't appear on TV.
Same exact thing.
They
don't want to legitimize. Here's why. In the climate debate, here's why. In 2007, they had a major New York City debate between the current head of the NASA Global Warming Temperature Data is Dr. Gavin Schmidt. This is your disinterested science just looking at the data. He's come out for a carbon tax. So he's essentially announced as the NASA head that he wants to see a carbon tax. He's gotten political. The man who preceded him was arrested at least half a dozen times and endorsed a book which suggested getting rid of industrial civilization was the solution to climate change. This is who's in charge of our temperature data. Anyway, the NASA head guy debated Michael Crichton and an MIT scientist. 3-on-3 debate, New York City. They polled the audience overwhelmingly before the debate that global warming was a crisis. 90-minute debate later, the audience in New York City in 2007 flipped. Global warming was not a crisis. The current lead NASA scientist publicly announced that we should not be doing any more debates, that we lost this one, that it doesn't serve the cause. And that's when it all started. They started, and that became by like 2015, that became the whole memo. That went everywhere. His colleagues, they don't want to debate because they lose. B, it puts doubts in people's head, and C, they don't want to legitimize the evil climate deniers, in quotes.
Which is all part of the scientific method, if I understand the science.
And the same thing happens in journals. They'll say, only the peer-reviewed journals. Well, gee, these are the same ones which we know, which they publicly release in the climate case. Well, if that journal editor publishes that, we'll blacklist that journal. How dare they do that? That guy can't publish. We see what was happening behind the scenes. They were intimidating them. And they run the show because they're getting the money. This is the top echelon of the UN scientists. They get the money. They pick all the conferences. Academia has to rely on that. I mean, it is so far, I don't want to say lost, but we are so far from winning, it's not even funny.
The truth is out there, and you can find a ton of it in the Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, climatedepot.com. Mark, I could pick your brain forever. I thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today. Check out climatedepot.com all the time. It's the hysteria. You're being lied to and manipulated. Have a great weekend on that charming note. We'll see you back here on Monday. Or immediately, as the case may be, I'm back. I don't know why the audio from the videos always comes out sounding like crap. I try to clean it up as best I can, but you can only polish a turd so much. So, sorry about that, but you could hear it all. Mark Moreno is a great guy, knows his stuff, and is really just a lot of fun to talk to. Pick his brain. I've never stumped him. I've never seen him even go, I look confused, going, I don't know. He knows this stuff backwards and forwards. Yet he gets ignored by the mainstream media and as they chase around 16-year-olds who read scripts prepared by their radical left-wing parents talking about how
the planet is going to die in 12 years unless we completely cede all of our individual liberties to big government. It's insane. It's totally insane. I have two more stories I want to touch on before we say goodbye. But as is the case, I have to go and give a nice hat tip to our sponsors. And it really is very important. We're just over a year. We're just over a year for Election Day 2020, the most important election in American history. This election will determine if America continues down the path of greatness or if America will spiral into a full-blown socialist country in the hands of left-wing radicals, those nut jobs up on Capitol Hill and in the media. We can't sit back and wait for 2020. We need you to take action now. Text the word DAILY to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates right from the president himself. Be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available, and you'll be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text the word DAILY to 88022. If the Democrats take back the White House, they will destroy our booming economy with strangling regulations. They will continue to prioritize illegal aliens over the safety of you and your family, and the wall will never get finished. You can't let that happen. You can't let them undo everything that's happened in the last few years. Make sure you're getting the news directly from the source by texting the word DAILY to 88022 or 88022. Again, the word DAILY to 88022 today. Do it now. This is paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. Remember, well, let's save that one for last. This one's kind of funny. A listener sent this to me. Oh, we're going green. Everybody's got to go green, right? Well, criminals love it when you go green. Fox News reports a Tesla electric patrol car that the Fremont, California police was forced to back off. That's run by them. The police were forced to back off from a pursuit after the vehicle's battery ran low in the middle of the chase. Quote, just slowed down to 6 miles of battery on the Tesla, so I may lose it here in a sec, the officer in the pursuit said, according to police radio transmissions obtained by KPIX Channel 5. Quote, if someone else is able, can they maneuver into the number one spot? Other officers then took over the pursuit. The chase was called off after it was deemed unsafe because of the reckless driving of the suspects. The suspect's vehicle was later found abandoned in San Jose. But the lead car, if there hadn't been other cars there, they still didn't catch the guy because, he's driving too fast in a high-speed chase. Let's just let him go. Just a routine murder or whatever he's wanted for. But the Tesla, they run out of battery. Cars can go a lot further, gasoline cars, real cars, can go a lot further than electric cars. Yet California and their hyper-left-wing environmental agenda demanding that we all get these cars goes to the police as well. And as more police officers and police departments in California are forced to use these little glorified wind-up toys, these vanity projects, more of this is going to happen. You get like a 55 Chevy, you can rule the world in 20 years when everybody else is forced to use electric cars. Oh, God. And then finally, remember the story of Carson King, the 24-year-old guy who raised more than $1 million for Children's Hospital, and then the Des Moines Register decided to do a little profile on the guy, and they unearthed. I love how these tweets have surfaced. They went and found them. The Des Moines Register said, we did a routine background check, which is no reason to do a routine background check on somebody doing charitable work. He's not, you know, and we found out that he's a cannibal who brutalizes homeless people and small woodland creatures, does gross sexual things to small woodland creatures. No, they found tweets from when he was 16 years old and decided to include that in their profile of him. They actively decided to include that. There was no reason to include that. Well, they have the editorial board, the editors at the Des Moines Register decided a fate for the reporter. Now, it's kind of funny and sad and pathetic. They fired the reporter who wrote the story. He's probably a young guy. I can't imagine he'd been in journalism all that long. But they fired him. They got rid of him because, well, that's what they do. His name was Aaron Calvin, and he's fired. And they ran a big piece in the Des Moines Register, the headline, "We hear you. You're angry. Here's what we're doing about it." The Des Moines Register staff has heard from hundreds of people in the past few days upset of our handling of the story of Carson King, the 24-year-old whose Bush Light sign on ESPN College Game Day show launched more than $1 million in donations to Iowa's Children's Hospital. We've listened with an open mind to everyone, especially Iowans, the people who are our neighbors, who care as much as we do about the state and everyone who lives in it. And we hear you. You're angry. You're disappointed. And you want us to understand that. She goes on. This is the editor-in-chief, a woman named Carol. Oh, it's so bad. And then they let know that the reporter will no longer work there because somebody went through and looked at his social media posts and they found some racist things. I talked about this yesterday. Racist and homophobic tweets from years gone by. Well, that's not the real problem here with the Des Moines Register. The real problem is the editors. A young, stupid reporter, fresh out of college, doesn't know better. The editors are supposed to know better. The young, stupid reporter should say, well, I found this information. I don't know if it's worth, should I include it? And the editors, according to their own accounting of it, said, yes, we've decided to include it, but we're going to put it down near the end. The editor should have said, no, it's not germane to the story. It's irrelevant, in fact, to everything else that's going on. Just ignore that. He said he deleted his tweets, so they're gone. Let's just move on and give this guy a pass from something he tweeted from a Comedy Central TV show when he was 16 years old. But no, the editors said, we'll include it. The world must know. Not the reporter. The reporter unearthed it. He should have just told the guy to delete them and we'll just pretend I never saw them. But no, he didn't do that. He reported to his bosses and his bosses said, yeah, the world must know. So firing the reporter is not going to solve this problem. A young reporter should be told, this is how you handle this in the future. You don't bring this crap up. You just ignore it. Maybe give the subject of your puff piece profile a heads up, but you don't report it. There's no reason to do that. Yet the editors at the Des Moines Register said, yes, the world has to know. They all keep their jobs. The reporter loses his, and the Des Moines Register thinks that they've got the problem solved. They still haven't issued an apology to King for reporting this crap, Carson King. That would go a long way to helping solve the problems of the Des Moines Register as people are canceling their subscription. There's a good possibility that newspaper will go out of business very soon. And if they think that what they've done in this case is good and enough and right, maybe they deserve to go out of business. All right, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Oh, yes. I guess I owe you guys some names of the winners drawn earlier. These are like the technical Oscars. I have two winners because I have two envelopes to mail these things out. Kelly Williams, congratulations or apologies. You won a signed copy of my book. I'll be emailing you shortly to ask what you would like inscribed in the book or nothing at all. It can just be a signature. And Chris Shoemaker, who I think signs his email Shoe, if I remember correctly. So congratulations to Kelly Williams and Chris Shoemaker. I'm sorry to everybody else who didn't win. There were actually a surprising 11 pages of entries, which shocked the hell out of me. If anybody, and those of you who like bought the book and sent me pictures, a lot of pictures of the book with cats, I like that. If you want a signed book plate, you just send me your address and I can send that to you. It's a nice little sticker designed just for this and you put it in the book and I write in it and I sign it and, you know, and you stick it in your book and it's kind of like the real thing. I'm happy to do that. Some people have asked if I would sell them a signed copy. I feel weird selling it. So no, but if you buy a copy of it and you want a signed book plate or you have a copy of it or whatever, I will more than happy to sign whatever you want on a book plate. drop it in the mail to you, and you'll get it in just a couple of days. Otherwise, have a great weekend. The Daily Caller's moving offices, so maybe the sound on next week's interview will be much, much better, hopefully. Otherwise, have a great weekend. Thank you for everything. I'll see you Monday.
My summary of the president's call was meant to be at least part in parody.